Okay. Thank you, Mark. So what we'll be talking about is part of our efforts to move some sort of a sensor platform over potentially thousands of breeders' plots and genetic studies. And we, you know, as the vehicle goes through, we want to gather as much information as possible. And obviously something about canopy height or canopy structure is of interest. And the we'll see, well, to back up, so white crop height, of course, it's interest as a trait per se for lodging, for mechanical harvest, all those discussions about getting the harvestable part high enough so the combine takes it. Height's a good indicator of overall growth, and it's also very sensitive to water deficits. You know, it's an elongation process. Height can reflect key developmental events. You know, in brassicas, the bolting is a big, massive change in heights represents a transition to flowering. So there are a lot of good reasons there for measuring height. It's also part of the overall picture of canopy architecture, useful for lodging resistance, which of course the foundation of the Green Revolution, and also can be used as a covariate to enhance interpretation of other sensor information. And the best example would probably be the active reflectance sensors, which are sensitive to the distance between the sensor and the canopy height. Ultrasonic sensors have looked very promising for measuring canopy height. They're robust. A lot of them are used industrially in very unfriendly environments, like to measure the level of grains in a bin or in a vehicle. They're also used to monitor the level of sewage and sewage settling ponds. So they're good, tough sensors. And they're also very easy to use, and I should say also it's just what we've used successfully. On the downside, there are an awful lot of options on the market, and then most of my talk will be showing why you shouldn't just go out and grab the first ultrasonic sensor you see. We got a lot of surprises along the way. So it's just the sensors are based on sonar, just like bats or dolphins or submarines. The sensor emits a sound pulse. It listens for the echo. It measures the time, knowing the speed of sound in air, whatever medium you're dealing with. It can calculate a distance. And so we're looking, say, to measure a distance in, say, 3 meters, you'd be looking at 0.02 of a second time delay on it. So, again, just basic sonar. Some things in the acoustics, the speed of sound increases with temperature about 1% for 5 degrees, and I think that's right on the range of where it could be annoying. If you were working all day in a field with the air temperature going from 10 degrees to 30 degrees, that could be enough to cause some undesired undesired drift. But then you have the question of which temperature is relevant. Is it the crop surface, the sensor, or somewhere halfway in between? And there's also a very slight humidity effect, but it looks like that's negligible in field circumstances. Higher frequencies are better. You know, the higher the frequency, shorter the wavelength, the better it reflects off of small objects. The current sensors are in the 40 kilohertz to 180 kilohertz range. That's like 9 millimeter to 2 millimeter wavelength. Of course, the beam strength decreases with a distance squared. You can change the shape of the beam. The larger diameter of the transducer, then the narrower the beam. And then with this, and I think this is a big challenge for us, is that here we go. The target characteristics are crucial, and I'll show an example. A hard, flat surface, you get very, very good distance measurements. As you get to angled surfaces, soft or something moving, things change. So I'd say the real problem we have, ultrasonic sensors are wonderful, but which one do you go with? And I think everything here is sort of in the funny guy on the upper left is in the $30 range, and most of the others are sort of in the $100 to $400 range. There's one there that essentially has its own data logging system, and that gets you up to about $1,200 when you put everything together. And so the sorts of variation you see, the frequency, supply voltages, whether it's a voltage or a current output, the working distances, the beam angle, and the response time, and temperature compensation. So I mentioned this temperature effect. I would like to have uncompensated sensors in this case, because I'd rather know which temperature I'm measuring. These things obviously are putting the temperature sensor inside the sensor, and I would argue that's not the temperature that you want to measure. So to do some testing, we took four brands of sensors, and being a federal employee, I say this is not an endorsement. You know, this is just to show what's out there. And we put it on our wonderful bicycle machine to go through the field. So let's look at the performance of the sensors. And first, to say this is a static test indoors for a square steel bar going from essentially zero out to 1.8 meters. And they're just spectacularly good. And I think all of the sensors will give you something close to this. You do get some funny things down here when you get too close. As the instrument technician in one of the companies I talked to says, you start to get problems with reflections and I guess like standing waves or something. And they actually do some processing to try and shorten that working distance, but they reach a limit where you just can't do it. So in that case, pay attention to the spec sheet. If it says a half meter minimum working distance, believe it. If you start to move it, so we said, well, let's try a piece of artificial turf as a target. And this was fairly coarse turf, not like, you know, carpet sort of a thing. Static, it worked fine, but if you start to vibrate it, you know, just by hand moving it, you start to see some issues. So this warned us that we were going to see something funny in the field. And so I'll go on. Most of what I'll show is for a single variety of wheat grown in a moisture gradient. So we have a linear irrigation system with constant diameter sprinkler heads, but they're with varying rates. So we get, there's essentially 10 levels, but because they're overlapping, it's essentially a moisture gradient going from overwatering down to, I think, about 20% of evaporative demand. We actually did measurements on 5 cultivars, but what I'll show you is just from a single strip. Okay, so here's the pulsar sensor, and first of all, the diamonds are actual the traditional eyeball measurement going out with a meter stick, trying to guess what the top of the canopy is, which is in itself a very error-prone process. Then the smaller points are the individual or what look like individual data points from the pulsar sensor, and we're logging at 5 hertz to a Campbell data logger. Then the curves are from quantile regression to try and capture some of the variation in the response. Because what we're seeing, I guess not surprisingly, is that these sensors are reporting multiple heights as opposed to what you'd get just with your eyeball. And I guess also say, obviously, we're going from wet at the zero distance along the strip to a severe water deficit at the 50-meter distance. Okay, so here's the pulsar. I don't know if you can see it in the back, but there's some funny little clumping. And if we zoom in on it, what you see is what looks like wonderful data are actually triplets of data. And if there's little change, you could get six data points together. And what we've seen, this is a problem of refresh rate, that even though the physics say you're measuring a very short time, there's a lot of calculation being done inside, and it's really only, you know, changing the signal at about a 2 hertz rate. And for our applications, we're sort of thinking we want to go 5 hertz or 10 hertz. So this thing looks like it works pretty well, but if you're trying to push the logging rate, you're going to get into trouble. So that was the pulsar. The Honeywell, similar sort of looking set of data. Again, though, you see some funny patterns. And in this case, you know, here's an example where we have a chain of, I guess, about 9 or 10 points. And what looks like happens here is that if the sensor can't determine the height, it just holds the last data point. So again, that would give you an inflated impression of how well your sensor is working. And mind you, this is not documented in the spec sheet. And I guess they just think this is normal performance, I guess, for their sensor. Here is, I guess it does show up. Okay, so here, just sort of contrasting four different sensors. The Pulsar, the one I showed first, the Honeywell, and this is with two crops with a very different architecture. On the left is an oilseed species on the gradient, with a brassica, and then on the right, of course, is the wheat. And you just look and you can see there's a tremendous difference in how the sensors are responding. And we're still working through this to figure out what the best sensor really is. My hunch is, and this has been suggested by other people, that a lot of that variability is actually very useful information. I think anyone who's ever done hand measurements of canopy height, is you're never happy with the data. And it looks like there's a lot here that we can analyze, and I think the quantile analysis looks promising. But the take-home message is that the sensor characteristics matter. There's frequencies, the internal processing and sensitivity, working distance, and so on down the line. Unfortunately, the vendors aren't very explicit about features like auto calibration, which means that if you have a sharp transition in height, the sensor may sort of stop for a little bit and recalibrate itself. And some of this is to deal with this issue of a short distance between the sensor and the target. If you're going along at a meter and a half, and then you suddenly jump just to a meter difference, some of the sensors are doing calculations inside to adjust the strength of the signal. So there's a lot going on there that is not clear. But in summary, I'd say that the sensors look promising. The quantile regression looks like a good way to start teasing apart the variation. And we'd like to move on to canopy structure, so something more about leaf distribution in the canopy. And I was very, very pleased to hear Bruce talk about the half-life of publications. This is a 1985 publication suggesting that ultrasonic sensors could be used to dissect canopy structure. And then another one, this is just showing that they were able to relate their sensor readings with something that looked like canopy structure. And then in 1989, this is John Wilkerson and a PhD student devised a system for soybean, lead acid battery, a single board computer. So I think this also goes back to what Bruce said, that the modern electronics presents some real opportunities, but we still have a lot of learning along the way to make the best use of the technology. So in conclusion, these sensors work, but we still need to figure out what the best characteristics are. And please don't just go out there and buy the first sensor you see in an electronic supply catalog. So thank you. Well, this is part of the next step on this. Andy French is laughing there because he's working with the LIDAR units, and that's another part. So we're seeing this nice variation, and we think it isn't lousy sensors. We think it's real biologically meaningful information. But if you've ever tried to characterize canopy structure, by doing horizontal cuts, you know how inaccurate that is. And so Andy has said, let's get a LIDAR. It may never be what we want for high-throughput phenotyping, but it will be our gold standard. And we're getting very, very close. I don't know if you want to comment on the LIDAR performance. Or? Okay, good. Yeah, come back next year, and maybe we'll have some side-by-side comparison. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just curious why you can see a low bias in
Oh, why? Oh, yeah, okay. So I think when you go out and eyeball something like wheat, you're looking at the top of the spike. And so these things are, you know, it's an energy-based thing. How much energy is reflected back? So it's sort of averaging something. And this is why I think, well, you know, you look at any crop canopy. There's no such thing as a single value for canopy, and that's what it is. So I think this is a case where we should not only be able to, well, we should be able to do way better than what you could do visually and a lot faster.
John, then Jeff, you mentioned, don't you sense it blindly?
I would say right now, look for one of the high frequency, the sensors that are in the 100 to 200 kilohertz range, and you can go. I think the talk to me afterwards. But I'll say this is the sort of thing that drives me nuts. As long as there's nobody here from a competing company, the Honeywell looks very good, but it uses a 24 volt supply, and it's just a pain in the neck to have everything else on 12 volts and have to add on two more batteries onto our thing. So I'm looking for something similar to the Honeywell with a 12 volt supply on it. The other thing that I would really like for the future is to find a sensor which allows you to log the actual signal instead of the signal processing. Because I think with the specific applications for crop research, it might be better to capture that raw signal rather than get something that you don't know how it's been processed.
One more question. Did you take into account the rate of speed or look at the rate of speed as you're moving over?
Excellent question. Obviously, the speed is going to degrade it a bit, and Pedro Andrade Sanchez, our ag engineer in Maricopa, keeps harping on this. And I think the best example, clearly there's a little bit of a problem just moving across a field, and Pedro wants us to use a system he set up, essentially a track where you can control the speed and move sensors. So we definitely need to look at that at some point. But I think recently what we've seen is some indications if you have the big transition, like going from one plot to a walkway to another plot, this auto recalibration thing may be getting in the way, because it sort of goes, whoops, I've gone from a 1 meter distance to 1.5 meter distance, back up to 1 meter, and it tries to recalculate in that interval. So that may throw off your data if you've got short plots.